Greetings and salutations, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this July 2010 Science News Update. I am your host for this evening, Jim Campanella. Let's just get started. I have all sorts of crazy stuff to pass along to you tonight. I will start off with an update of a story from June. You may remember that Dr. Julio Marchini sent me a story that was originally reported on Boing Boing. The story involved three East Indian doctors who wrote a story in the December 2009 issue of the Journal of the Indian Medical Association. No one who wrote in Boing Boing about this had read the article because it was so hard to obtain, but they did report on the published abstract and title. The story by Drs. Hussein Rizvi and Usmani was entitled High Frequency Ultrasound Torturer. The horrendously written abstract suggested that the good doctors were supporting the use of ultrasound torture because it was effective and undetectable. Or it could be equally interpreted that they simply sucked at writing English and were condemning ultrasonic torture. The Boing Boingers decided that the former was the case and went all out themselves condemning these poor schmucks. Since I had little basis to make a decision, I wrote the authors of the paper, and Dr. Shamim Rizvi was kind enough to email me back a copy of the paper. How hard is this paper to get? Well, Dr. Rizvi apparently could not even get an electronic copy of it himself. He did not send me a PDF formatted file, as most people would normally do. He sent me digital photos of his own hard copy of the paper. I think that he went to a lot of trouble for me, and now to return the favor, let me do a proper review of this demonized article. The first half of the article is a history of ultrasound and its uses. The authors spend quite a bit of time giving background on all the clinical good that ultrasound has been put to, including many technical details and explanations of methods of ultrasound visualization and use of ultrasound to do things like break up kidney stones. The second part of the article is a bit more chilling, entitled Preferential Areas of Exposure in the Body by the Torturer. Well, the authors then go into detail on all the best parts of the brain and body to treat with ultrasonic waves to, quote, ablate violence and aggression in the treated individual. They even explain how you need to trepan, that is, open up the skull, to get optimal exposure of the sound waves into the brain tissue. Yes, this is creepy and disturbing. But up until this point, I saw no clear evidence that they supported this type of torture. As with most things in life, truth lies neither here nor there, but in some weird, indiscriminate, Twilight Zone-ish place in between. The last part of the article seems to be mostly concerned, I swear, with a lack of safety monitoring of torturers. Apparently, the authors are indeed worried about ultrasonic torture as a new and upcoming way of inflicting pain, but they feel that there should be governmental agencies watching over torturers so they do not get out of hand and harm their victims. Again, in reading this, I feel like I entered some weird parallel universe. Now I'm going to conclude with this. I believe the authors are sincerely against sonic torture and have written this paper as a warning. But their article is so badly written out and convoluted that it is difficult at times to clearly get at their intentions. I can only go by the last line of the first paragraph of the paper, which states, quote, "This paper is not written to discourage the use of ultrasound in diagnostic and therapeutic uses. On the contrary, it tends to awaken awareness on the possible misuse in torture." Unquote. I guess I couldn't have said it better myself. Now an update on a story I discussed months ago on the possibility of life on Saturn's moon Titan. There are two new studies that examine evidence for life based on missing chemicals on Titan. Now, what exactly does that mean? Well, the first study is in the journal Icarus. It's a paper by astrobiologist Dr. Daryl Strobel of Johns Hopkins University. And it may have implications for the possibility of life on Titan, which is believed to harbor methane lakes. Now, Strobel created a computer simulation indicating that hydrogen molecules flow downward from Titan's atmosphere but are somehow missing from the surface. Hydrogen molecules are generated in Titan's atmosphere when ultraviolet light breaks down methane and acetylene molecules. And then it should just go down to the surface, but it's not there. Using data from two spectrometers on the Cassini spacecraft, Strobel found that hydrogen molecules flow out of the atmosphere at a rate of about 10,000 trillion trillion a second, but the analysis found no corresponding buildup at the surface of the moon. Strobel says it's unlikely that hydrogen is sequestered in a cave or beneath the surface, and because Titan is so cold, a catalyst would have to be required to convert the hydrogen molecules and acetylene back into methane. So what does that mean? Well, Strobel says, quote, "These results are suggestive of exotic life, but by no means a clincher. What we want to do next is actually measure something that may prove or disprove the abiotic and biological hypotheses, like the existence of a chemical catalyst," unquote. Now, if that were not enough, a second paper came out recently with similar results in the Journal of Geophysical Research. Dr. Roger Clark of the U.S. Geological Survey reports, using another Cassini spectrometer, that he finds a lack of acetylene there. Both acetylene and benzene are expected to be produced when sunlight strikes the methane gas in Titan's atmosphere, and then those molecules should fall to the surface. Clark and his colleagues found loads of benzene on the surface of the moon, but no acetylene, even though acetylene is predicted to be the more abundant of the two compounds in the Titan atmosphere. Now, if it was just Strobel's results by themselves, we could discount his findings as simply a chemical process going on. Taken alone, the lack of acetylene, even with his previously found deficit of the compound ethane, wouldn't make much of a story. Those low abundances could even have been due to a smaller than predicted production of the compounds in the atmosphere of Titan. But low acetylene and low ethane, plus low levels of hydrogen, suggested by Clark's paper, could equal life. Several researchers have even suggested that hydrocarbons on Titan could be the basis of life, playing the same role there that liquid water does on Earth. Just as organisms on Earth combine molecular oxygen with organic compounds to get energy, organisms on Titan might react molecular hydrogen with organic materials such as acetylene. When combined with hydrogen, acetylene is a potentially huge source of metabolic energy. The results of this metabolism would be the production of methane, of which Titan has tons, apparently. That might also explain why Titan has tons of methane. Methane is usually pretty unstable and breaks down easily in sunlight, so you wouldn't expect large amounts of methane on Titan. And yet there it is. One explanation is that organic life is continually replenishing it. Our next story involves snakes in an MRI machine, which doesn't sound quite as good as snakes on a plane, does it? Dr. Yadin Dudai of the Weizmann Institute in Israel published a paper in the June issue of the journal Neuron, which examines the roots of human courage and how humans overcome their fears. Of course, this involves something that even Samuel Jackson would freak out over. Dudai designed a conveyor belt that carried a large, writhing snake strapped to the top of a box with a single piece of Velcro. 16 volunteers were then confined inside an MRI scanner with the snake behind their heads and were repeatedly given the choice to push a button that brought the snake 11 centimeters closer or move it 11 centimeters farther away from them. After each choice, a mirror showed the person the snake's position behind them. The 4-foot-long snake used was not poisonous and could not constrict or hurt the subjects, but for anybody with even a mild snake phobia, it would scare the blazes out of them. As the subjects chose to advance the snake, that was interpreted as a move that was courageous. Dudai and his team scanned their brain activity at that point. Dudai's team then compared which brain regions were active to the parts that lit up when a subject succumbed to their fear and moved the snake away. This comparison turned up a region in the front of the brain called the subgenual anterior cingulate cortex. When the subgenual anterior cingulate cortex was active in the subjects' brains, the researchers noticed that bodily indicators of fear, such as increased sweating, were reduced. The paper hypothesizes that this brain region is crucial for directing the body to ignore fear. Why is this important? Well, stimulating or activating this region might one day help people with phobias to overcome their fears. Understanding how the brain chooses to overcome fearful impulses may help scientists treat people with phobias or panic disorders. Tony, are you listening? There's hope yet out there for you, my friend. If we can't erase bad old memories quite yet, then maybe neuroscientists can help people to simply be less anxious about them. Ah, speaking of fear, you horror movie fans out there might find this next story interesting. What makes for a good, believable scream in a movie? Well, according to Dr. Daniel Bloomstein of the University of California in Los Angeles, it has to do with how chaotic the scream actually is. His findings were published last month in the journal Biology Letters. According to Bloomstein, filmmakers use chaotic, unpredictable sounds to evoke particular emotions. And he assessed screams and other outbursts from more than 100 movies to find this out. He acoustically analyzed 30-second cuts from more than 100 movies representing a broad array of genres. The movies included such titles as Aliens, Goldfinger, Annie Hall, The Green Mile, Slumdog Millionaire, Titanic, Carrie, The Shining, and Black Hawk Down. Not unexpectedly, the horror films had a lot of harsh and atonal screams. Dramatic films, on the other hand, had soundtracks with fewer screams, but a lot of abrupt changes in frequency. And adventure films, it turns out, had a surprising number of harsh male screams. What was the point? Well, Bloomstein typically studies screams in marmots, not starlets. He's not necessarily interested in the movies themselves in his study, although his results are kind of cool to cinephiles like me. What he's really interested in is a better understanding of the ways of communicating that are common among all animals, including humans. Bloomstein says that potentially there are universal rules of arousal and ways to communicate fear. I absolutely believe there are universal rules of communication there. When I was working on my master's degree, I heard terrified rabbits screaming while taking blood samples for some immunological research. Rabbit screams are chaotic and weirdly sound like small children or babies screaming. If you want to be completely unnerved and freaked out, there are a few sounds that I know of that are more blood-curdling. The last two stories of the evening have to do with emotions and lying. Now, I'm not a big watcher of TV shows. There are a couple that I watch without fail, one of those being Lost before it ended a couple of months ago, and the other being the amazing comedy Big Bang Theory, because it's populated by kindred spirits who are much like myself and my geekish friends. One of the shows that I have recently found fascinating is a drama which borders on the SF sometimes, since it delves into psychology that is pretty cutting edge. The show is called Lie to Me, and Tim Roth plays the cocky Dr. Cal Lightman, who is a deception expert. He is basically a human lie detector who uses his years of psychological study and training into the human voice, language, expressions, and micro-expressions to tell when people tell the truth. Apparently, the show does have a psychologist consultant and is based mostly in fact, which I find all the more fascinating. What teacher, myself included, wouldn't want to look a student in the eye who lies that he missed his exam because his grandmother died for the fourth time and be able to instantly call him on it? It would be devastating. Of course, with great power comes great responsibility. One of the plot lines of the show is that Dr. Lightman's marriage was destroyed because his superpower allowed him to instantly tell whether his life was lying or not. Truth is not always good for a marriage. Oh yeah, and Lightman is also a consummate liar himself and con man because he understands exactly what facial expressions and language need to be used for lies to be interpreted as truth by others. Where am I going with this? What are the purpose of facial expressions? One might immediately respond that they evolved so that humans could more easily convey emotions to each other. Without those universal expressions, we would have long ago killed each other all off because of complete mistrust. If you have no idea whether your colleague is sad, happy, or exhilarated, then you will be slow to trust them. Even when we are deceived by others, we generally trust in our abilities to read facial expressions. Well, there's strong evidence that besides just reflecting our internal emotions to others, facial expressions may have another function entirely. Expressions on our faces appear to have a feedback mechanism. In other words, if you smile, you will feel happier. There is truth to the old wives' tale that suggests that if you feel sad, you will feel better by smiling. If you are sad and frown, you will feel even worse. In an upcoming issue of the Journal of Psychological Science, David Havas of the University of Wisconsin-Madison examined the effects of Botox on facial expressions and emotional feedback. He found support for the hypothesis that facial expressions activate links between brain regions responsible for emotions and language. 2 weeks after their first Botox injection, 40 women took an average of about one-third of a second longer to read sentences describing angry and sad situations than they did immediately before the procedure. Havas hypothesizes that Botox-induced paralysis of the frown muscle, which runs across the forehead just above the eyes, allowing it to pull the eyebrows inward and down, may gradually weaken brain circuits that coordinate negative emotions. On the other side of things, banishing frown lines with Botox can have serious social repercussions. Previous studies indicate that mimicry of facial expressions critically aids in the understanding of others' emotions and intentions and behaviors. So not only will other people not be able to tell the emotions of a Botox patient, but the Botox patients will have a harder time understanding the emotions of others. During the process of conversation or communication, we often mimic the facial expressions of other people. If you're talking to someone who's sad, you will likely have a sad expression on your face. Well, if you can't mirror that expression, then you're less likely to be able to understand the emotions of others. And worse, Havas suggests that, quote, real-life conversations involve exquisitely timed banter, and seemingly small disturbances in evaluating emotional statements may foster serious misunderstandings, unquote. So basically, if you're talking to someone and they don't see you mirroring their emotions, then they may wonder what exactly is going on in your head. On to the last story. This concerns lying antelopes. You may remember a few months ago I reported on some young monkeys who used deception to get food from older monkeys. I reported that as being one of the few deliberate deceptive practices found in the animal kingdom outside of humans. Well, here's another example. Dr. Jakob Bro-Jorgensen from the University of Liverpool reports on antelope deception in the July issue of The American Naturalist. Here's the basic result. Male topi antelopes will resort to deception to keep a potential mate around, snorting as if there's a lion nearby just when it seems she might wander off. The discovery is the first report of outright mate deception in an animal other than Homo sapiens. The paper says, quote, some mother birds will feign a broken wing to lure a predator away from their nest, and there are reports in animals such as monkeys and squirrels of males deceiving other males in the heat of competition. But the male antelope behavior is the clearest example of tactical deception between mates in animals other than humans, unquote. The devious behavior was observed in the topi antelopes on the savannas of the Masai Mara National Reserve in Kenya during the spring mating season. During that season, males stake out territories rich in grass, and the female antelopes are sexually receptive for only one day and spend that day visiting males serially, munching grass and, well, mating. Bro-Jorgensen noticed that when a female would start to wander away from a particular male's territory, the male would look in the direction she was headed, prick up his ears, and snort loudly. The same snort that the animals used when they noticed a lion, a leopard, or some other approaching predator. Bro-Jorgensen said, quote, it was very funny. It made me laugh. It was such an obvious lie. Clearly there was no lion. Unquote. To test whether the males were lying outright, Bro-Jorgensen first observed males when they were making honest snorts. Male antelopes snorted when the human was approaching, the researchers found, even if an antelope was alone. This suggests that, rather than being a warning to fellow antelopes, a true snort is actually directed at the predator itself. That kind of makes sense. If they have enough of a head start, topi antelopes can easily outrun a lion or even a cheetah. By snorting at a cat who thinks it's hidden in the high grass, an antelope says, "I see you there, give it up." The researchers also recorded true and false snorts and played them back to female antelopes to see if the ladies could tell the difference. Judging by their reactions, the females couldn't tell a true snort from a false snort. Neither could an audio analysis by the researchers, who detected absolutely no acoustical differences between the true and the false snorts. The clincher that the males were lying to just score came from observations of the animals in action. A male antelope secured 2 to 3 more chances at mating with a restless female if he pulled that false snort trick, according to the paper. When receptive females were to male's territory, the males emitted as many as 9 false snorts for every honest one. But even antelopes can't cry wolf too many times. Quote, "If a male keeps making false alarms and there's no predator," Bro Jorgensen says, "she simply walks away in the end." It makes me feel a bit better that female antelopes are not quite as oblivious as I first thought. Well, that's all from me for now. As always, take care. If you have an MRI coming up soon, make sure you check it for large snakes before crawling in. And I hope I've inspired some of you. Until next time, this is Jim Campanella.